Welcome to Constructive Curiosity, a podcast that promotes personal growth, authenticity, and helping others through inspirational messages, techniques for success, and interviews with extraordinary people. Follow and subscribe on YouTube and Instagram at Constructive Curiosity or listen on your preferred podcast platform. The journey begins now.
Hello and welcome into Constructive Curiosity for another episode here. I'm joined by Elvia Caparones. How are you doing today?
Hi, Casey. I'm doing well. How about you? Thank you.
I'm doing very well. You know, the weather's kind of awkward this week. You know, I'm in Kentucky, so we've had really warm and now it's really cold again. How about where you're at?
I am in Jacksonville. It is not sunny today, but it is not that cold, so I'm keeping it positive.
See, Jacksonville is an area that I'd love to move to eventually, the St. Augustine, St. John's County. Yes, wonderful. You got the history, the nice weather, but you're not as miserable as the south tip of Florida where it's too hot.
Yes, I'm right there. I'm in San Agustin.
Ooh, very nice. So give us a little bit of background on yourself.
I was born in the Dominican Republic, and I'm the fourth of four daughters. My mom, as a nurse, she managed to raise four daughters. So it was very inspirational to see her working hard to support her family. And I have that leadership inspiration from my mom and my grandmother. I have a strong influence from seeing my mom and my grandmother leading their families and having great outcomes for the family. So that's where I come from.
Very nice. I do have to ask, I'm a huge baseball fan, and the Dominican Republic is a fantastic place for baseball. Were you into baseball at all?
I love baseball. I actually used to play baseball over there. Yeah, baseball is our number one sport there, and we have a lot of famous players like David Ortiz is one of my favorites, and we have some other famous players, but he's one of the biggest ones.
I wish the U.S. would adopt more of the Caribbean style of baseball. You know, the fans are more excited. They're more into it. It's not so quiet and refined. It reminds me a lot. I've been to Japanese baseball games when I lived in Japan, and they're both electric. You know, the Caribbean style of baseball, Japanese style of baseball reminds me more of a World Cup soccer or, you know, college football or something like that where the fans are very intense, where American baseball, they're very laid back. It's much more of a relaxed. And it's like, why not be loud and intense and have fun?
We have that in our blood. You know, our Latin culture is energetic. It's like we go for it. We really enjoy what we're doing. So I believe this is what we put into the baseball. All the players you see that they have that energy, that enthusiasm, that actually is contagious. The way that we live over there is very contagious because we try to be happy no matter what. In my country, it's a third development country. It's not a first. I wouldn't say that is. It has a lot of areas of growth, I will say, and we do have places where we don't have electricity. I actually grew up not having a lot of basic things like electricity and water. However, we try to look at the positive side of things. Whenever the electricity used to go out, we used to say, oh, we lost it. But when electricity came back, we used to make an applause and celebrate that electricity came back. We appreciate that. You know, we get to appreciate not having electricity and then having it is a way of appreciating that resource.
Absolutely. That's wonderful perspective. And I feel like it's overlooked a lot, especially in this country. People take so many things for granted and they don't pay attention. You know, it's just an inconvenience and it's expected, but you got to find ways to celebrate every little thing in life, or else, you know, you're putting yourself behind rather than jumping ahead.
Absolutely. I truly believe happiness is in just these little things that sometimes we don't appreciate.
Talked a little bit about that Latin attitude, Latin perspective. I'm imagining you probably brought that to your professional life as well.
Absolutely. I have faced many rejections that I can count into my job search process. You know, I came to this country as a tech professional. When I came, I was a business intelligence consultant in Madrid, Spain. I had over 5 years of career. But when I came to the United States, I didn't speak a word of English. And that was like starting over for my career. I started from scratch, learning English. When my boyfriend at that time introduced me to his family, I couldn't say a word of English. I was just smiling and saying, thank you very much. That was the only word that I could say. So, you know, being exposed to the American culture was a shock at the beginning because I thought I could communicate in English. I was studying English in my country. I studied English in college. I studied English even after college. And I thought I was going to be able to speak. But coming here and seeing everybody to speak so fast was really challenging for me to pick it up. And for my career, it was like starting over. I had to prepare my resume in English, translated from Spanish to English. I had to start getting myself used to the language, learning the language. And I felt like I was starting over, like I was just going out of college and I was just starting my career from scratch.
And that's brutal. I said, we talked a little bit before we started recording about that. I've tried to learn Spanish. I've tried to learn Japanese. And luckily, I'm a native English speaker. English, I've always heard, is one of the hardest ones to learn as well, because there's so many different words that have 3 to 4 to 5 meanings. You just don't, and if they don't use it in the right context or you're not picking up on it, it's very difficult to understand. And the thing that always got me with, you know, Spanish and Japanese too, was it's the local dialects. That's what it never prepares you for when you learn, is that every region has their own local dialect with different words that don't necessarily make sense for what they actually say. So if you go to a different part of the country, somebody may say something, you're like, what? Are you even speaking English? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Definitely. This is something that one of the most challenging things is that sometimes you say words that don't exactly mean exactly they only mean something within the context that you say them. So if you don't get immersed into the American culture, it is very difficult to learn English in the American way. Because sometimes you even say things that could mean a totally different thing depending on the context. That was very challenging. The way I approached the situation was I started to listening all the time, even YouTube videos. I tried to focus on the professional side of things. So I started to listen to videos that were interview preparation related. People who were actually going and interview in English and listening and mastering the language that they were using. So after I mastered a little bit listening, I started speaking little by little, slowly. And speaking with people and engaging with people, immersing myself in the culture has helped me a lot to be able to get to the point that I am right now.
Yeah, I mean, I have an immense respect. Like I said, I've tried to learn language. I'm still trying to learn a few, and it's definitely difficult. So anybody, if you hear someone speaking a second language, be very respectful. There was a lot of work to get there. And remember, they can speak a language that you probably can't.
It is challenging.
Very challenging. And like, it's very impressive that you've been able to master it, because that's a skill that's not easy to come by.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And I faced many rejections in America due to my inability to comprehend things that were tech related at the beginning. I couldn't express myself in the technical aspect. But I had to master that skill by listening and studying myself on those technical elements that I needed to learn in English. So at the beginning, you know, I even got people that were laughing at me or pretended not understand me. But I use those as an opportunity of growth. I use those opportunities are, you know, when somebody makes fun of you because of your English ability, of your English accent, I don't think they are referring to actually the way you are speaking. They basically, that tells more about them than about you. So I try to see those as an opportunity to improve me as opposed to letting that defeat me.
So there was a good quote that kind of goes along with this. It's from the show Ted Lasso. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not. but he talks about how people would always judge him and were mean to him. And he said he saw a different, you know, quote on a wall, and it said, you know, be curious, not judgmental. And if people would be curious and ask you follow-up questions and try to understand you, they're actually going to learn. So them being judgmental has nothing to do with you. It has to do with their own ignorance and problems.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I try to embrace that as opportunity to improve me, as opposed to letting that defeat me. It will not defeat me. It will help me to improve and get better.
That's a wonderful attitude. We talked about before, if you say you're talking about resilience should be your last name and persistence should be in your DNA. Is that what you were saying earlier?
Yes, definitely. I have mastered resilience. I have faced so many rejections. And I try to take every single thing as opportunities to improve myself. So whenever I get a rejection for a business opportunity, for in my job search, I try to analyze what are the things that I could do better next time? What are the things that I probably would like to stop doing that didn't help me to get that job? And I try to take the positive side. I try to think about what are the mechanisms that I'm going to put in place to prevent that from happening in the future. And I take them as a learning opportunity. So I know that that knowledge is going to help me to get closer to my goal. And I persist until I get things accomplished. You know, once I have a goal, a clear goal, I do my very best to reach it. If there are something that is preventing me from outside of me, I try to work it out and until I get results. You know, I know that there are things that probably don't depend on me. I try not to focus on those. I try to focus only on the things that I can make improvement on. Process improvement is part of my program management career as a technical program manager. So I always focus on the things that I can do to improve myself. I try to look for growth areas. I try to look for opportunities of growth, opportunities of improvement. And I try to see those as turning points in my career. How can I do to make that better next time? How can I learn from this?
See, it sounds like you mastered one of the hardest things that most of us struggle with. It's what's outside of your sphere of control. You know, whether it's me talking to my children about this or employees or even, you know, I've had to talk with bosses before. When you try to worry about things that you can't affect or control, you're literally wasting time. You're not doing anything productive. There's nothing you can do about it. But you can focus on what you can control, and that can bring wide range of improvements and get, you know, far-reaching effects.
Absolutely. Love that perspective. Focus on the things that you can control. For anyone hearing right now, I know that you may be facing rejections. I know you may be facing some people who may be underestimating you. I know you may be facing people who don't believe in you. And what you can do in those cases is try to stop to listen to people who are saying no and focus on the people who are supporting you to get to the next level. There are a lot of people who may support you, and those people are the ones that you want to focus on and you want to listen to. Don't listen to people who are saying no. Focus on the people that are saying, instead of saying, you can get there, and change it to say, how can I get there? How may I prepare myself to get there? Focus on people that are actually changing that no into how can I make it possible?
Yeah, solicit that advice. Try to get it where you can. And if somebody does give you a rejection and it's not somebody you'd ever asked for advice, then you probably shouldn't worry about it too much, because that person's not going to be a major influence on you anyway.
Exactly. Focus on people who actually can make an impact. And always surround yourself with people that actually have that positive mindset. The best way to live this life is focusing on the positive. We don't want to focus on the other way around, because that's not worth it. So I recommend people to surround themselves with people who have leadership skills. Leaders will always inspire you to do the best, to go to the next level. Leaders will always say that you can do things, that you can accomplish anything that you set your mind to. If you have the right mindset, if you have the right attitude, if you actually believe you can get there, you are 80% there already. So I recommend people to focus on that positivity and remove any negative influence that could be along the way. Because if I don't have focused on the negative, I would not have been here today in the place that I am, you know. all of these rejections that I faced, I never thought that they were gonna prevent me from getting a tech job in America. So I always thought they were taking me a step closer.
Tell us a little bit about that tech job, because it's a very impressive position you have.
Guess what? You just proved that advertising on podcasts works. Reach thousands of local listeners each week and grow your business. Reach out to Constructive Curiosity to find out more by emailing contactus@constructivecuriosity.com.
Thank you. Thank you. Definitely was a journey. When I mentioned when I came here, I was just starting from scratch. I did had a lot of experience in the software industry as a tech professional, business intelligence engineer, consultant in Spain. But coming here to the United States, I had to start from scratch. I had to find a job to support myself until I mastered my English. So I thank God I found an opportunity that was speaking Spanish for a financial institution that was from Madrid, Spain. They were based in Boston, Massachusetts, and I started that job using my Spanish-speaking ability, using Spanish as a first language. English was used for business, and I was slowly ramping up myself in the English language, but mostly everybody was speaking English. But I tried to keep learning the English language outside of work. You know, if I don't have done that, I don't have just stayed speaking Spanish. So I decided that I wanted to go to the next level and work for an American company. So that's when I started preparing myself for interviews in English. And I was approached by a consulting company via LinkedIn. Actually, LinkedIn is a powerful way to connecting with companies. Most of the great jobs that I have had, as I've been able to find them through my LinkedIn profile. So I highly recommend people to keep their LinkedIn profile solid, because that actually has opened a lot of opportunities for me. So one consulting company approached me, and I started having conversations with that consulting company. I was practicing interviews, and then I went to an interview with them. And luckily, that interview was successful, and I got that job. That was my first job in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I kept working on my English. You know, that consulting firm sent me to different clients. And I was, you know, ramping myself up in English, and that actually was a great opportunity for me to start in the tech world in America. So I highly recommend consulting firms for people who are starting.
No, absolutely. And I mean, you talked about that interview prep. That's something I always stress to people, is don't just go in blind. You know, and this is not a shameless business plug. I'm just literally saying you don't have to work with a career coach if you don't want to work with one, but work with yourself. Talk out loud in the mirror. You know, rehearse what you want to say. Google what questions they may ask, because if you don't rehearse your answers, you're going to be going in blind. And rehearse yourself harder than it could possibly ever be. That's what, at least what I like to do. Ask yourself all the wrong questions. So what are your perspective on that?
Very good question. My husband was playing the role of my coach at that time. He was teaching me English and helping me to present myself in a professional manner. So he actually helped me to practice interview questions. I practiced with him, and that actually gave me a lot of confidence to go into the job interview. I highly recommend people to prepare themselves. You know, I believe in the power of coaching. I believe that if you want to get from point A to point B, you want to hang out with people who are in point B. You want to learn from people who are already in the place you want to be in. And sometimes that means that you want to invest in your personal development. I truly believe on that. I believe that mentors can help you get to the next level. I have had so many mentors in my career, and I do believe in the power of investing in my personal development to the T. You know, I would not be here if I would not have invested time and money in my career, time and money on leaders who have helped me to get to the next level. I truly believe in the power of coaching and learning from people who are already in the place you want to get to.
Absolutely. And so what are some of your best coaching techniques that you like to use?
First of all, I believe that listening first is a great thing to do. When you actually are starting to work with a client, you need to better understand, and listening with empathy helps me understand where my customers are in, so I can come up with ideas and thoughts to help them overcome. So listening is my powerful first one. The other technique that I will leverage is using the five whys. I love to dig in a little bit more without saying so much, you know, listening and using the powerful statement of keep asking, keep digging, like we're peeling an onion. And sometimes people don't even know where they are stuck. Look, we want to know that from them. You know, when they start speaking about the struggles they are having and the challenges, you need to uncover what is the actual problem that is preventing them from acing that job, from reaching that personal goal, or from taking the next step. So once you uncover the problem, you can actually come up with ideas and thoughts to help them out. But the first thing that I do is listening and apply the five wise strategies to better understand what the problem is. Before being judgmental or coming up with anything else, I try to stay away from that. I think the first step is to understand with empathy where the customer actually is facing struggle to be able to help them move forward.
That's wonderful. Yeah, you're not. The coaching career, you're in that, you care about people. You're not there for anything else. You're there for the people. You want to see people succeed and be successful. And, you know, getting to the root of the problem is something that people struggle to do. They really do. I mean, there's actually a whole movie scene in the movie Moneyball where the whole, like, you know, scouting department sitting down. And he asked, the GM asked everybody, what's the problem? And they all start naming symptoms. You know, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. Well, no, he finds such a mess that this is the actual problem. And if you're trying to attack the symptoms and not the problem, you're not going to be very successful.
Right. Absolutely. I truly believe that we first need to learn what is the problem, uncover the problem. I do have several techniques also for helping my customers to build their self-confidence. Once we uncover the problem, one of the things that I have found that is preventing the job seekers that I help is that they need to boost their self-confidence. Rejection is not about you. Sometimes they may have thousands of candidates for a given job, and they even may reject your resume automatically by a process that actually doesn't know you. You cannot base your self-worth on a hiring manager who spent 5 seconds looking at your resume. You are much more valuable than that. So the first thing that I do is to help my clients to work on their self-confidence. You're going to face rejection along the process. You need to conquer those and use them and turn them into opportunities. And for that, you need to have confidence.
Well, confidence is key, and you can helping people develop their confidence is a great way to start. And you talked a little bit about, you know, those automatic rejections. That's one of the things that can be so frustrating because you're missing a few key words. You don't quite meet a percentage match or whatever it is. So don't get discouraged by that, but I do recommend you use a comparison tool. There's some out there that are free. We offer one on Constructive Curiosity, but there's also lots of other sites that have them. Take the job description, take your resume, and if you're a certain percentage below, if you can't honestly correct your resume to make it match closer to the job description, then it's probably not the right position for you.
Got it. Definitely. I recommend candidates to look for 60% match. You don't need to have 100% match before applying because the 40% is an opportunity for you to keep learning and growing in that given role. So I recommend at least 60% match before applying. And once you apply, if you hear from that company that you're going to go into an interview, I highly recommend to start preparing yourself on the 40% that you believe you were not a match. Like, for instance, if you see that they are asking experience on Tableau, you proactively can start taking an online course on Tableau. So you show during the interview that the 60% that you have, you know that you have, but you're aware of the 40% and you are already working on that to be able to cover the gap, to fit the gap.
There's so many resources available. I don't think people are aware of. There's free resources for a lot of different skills. There's also, you know, paid to get you closer to an expert level on those resources that are out there. But don't let a career gap get in your way, or don't let, you know, a skill gap get in your way. You can enhance your skills and you can continue to improve yourself.
Absolutely. Companies are very aware of that. When they post a job, they are not expecting 100% match because that will be perfection. And sometimes they are things that are nice to have. if you have at least one of the things that are nice to have, you may have chances of exiting. If you have 60% of the requirements and you have at least one or two nice to have, that's a very good way of getting started.
And you know, it is another thing I always tell people is when you're looking at the position descriptions, if you don't have their like musts, probably you're not going to make it through the algorithm. So if you do, if they're looking for a certain, you know, skill set, if it's PMP, CSM, you know, Tableau, Perficient, whatever it is, if that's a specific call out and you don't have it, it may or may not get you through that initial algorithm. So maybe put it in your cover letter that you're building that skill or you're working toward it, because some of those callers do have it, where they'll look at your resume and cover letter.
And even in the resume, like I'm preparing for PMP right now, I could put in my resume that I am I'm preparing for PMP, and that actually will have the keyword, because I already have done the course, I already have done a preparation for the exam. I'm only missing to go and take the exam, for instance. But I could add in my resume PMP pursuing or PMP candidate. That will actually let them know that I'm preparing for that PMP, even though I don't have it right now, but I'm working on it.
Absolutely. So talk a little bit more about your work stuff you're doing right now. So what are you currently working on?
I currently work at Amazon as a technical program manager. The TPM is actually in a strategic role. You do a lot of work making sure you are connected to the goals of the given program, making sure that you actually manage stakeholders, prioritization, working along with the program product managers to make sure the technical teams know exactly what are the requirements that come from business, and uncovering the blockers, the risks that are along the way, and also communicating the status to our stakeholders. It's a role that actually, I will say that a TPM is a problem solver.
No, absolutely. That's a great way to sum it up. And like, what are some of your favorite program management, project management techniques that you use?
In terms of techniques, I don't know if you refer that by the approach. Do you have an example?
How do you prefer Kanban boards?
I'm a Scrum fan. I love Scrum framework. I do love my Scrum board. I've been working on Scrum as a Scrum Master for the past 10 years. So I love the role of a Scrum Master. Helping the team is actually a key role to make sure you build high performing teams. And what I like about the role is that allows me to influence without the title. I believe that to be a leader, you don't need to have the title. It's your influence and the way you treat people that makes you a leader. And I feel really accomplished when one of my coworkers said that, "Elby, it's a pleasure working with you." So I believe that what can set you apart in a role that it doesn't have the title of leader is having your level of influence and the way you treat people. The way you treat people is actually what makes the difference. Leading with empathy, showing that you care about people deeply, it can definitely take you along the way in this role specifically, because you are actually helping the team succeed, and you need to show that you have empathy, that you care, and that you support them.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you touching on the fact that, you know, what a leader really is, and every organization, whether you know you're a nonprofit or a for-profit, government, whatever the industry you're doing, it's about the people. It's not about the product. It's not about anything else. All of those things come if you have the right people. They feel safe. They feel empowered. If you do that with your employees, you're going to be successful.
Plus 1 million. People need to feel valuable. It has been actually one Google research recently discovered that high-performing teams are teams that actually know that they are contributing to the mission. They know the mission of the organization. They know they are contributing, and they know exactly how their work aligns to the organization's vision. You know, they know they are connected. They know they are contributing, and those are the teams that actually excel in their role, because they know the contribution that they can make to the organization. Those teams are also teams that feel empowered to do their job. They feel empowered. They are self-organized teams, like in Scrum, they are self-organized. They actually know the goal, they know the goal, but they actually self-organize themselves to get that, to reach that goal. They are empowered to get there. So building a high-performing team is basically empowering them. And that's what I like about the technical program manager role, because it allows me to help the team to do that.
So have you seen any struggles of, I don't know, I'm pretty sure Amazon's been agile for quite a while, but have you seen your career looking at going from traditional project management to agile or finding a happy hybrid? What are some of the struggles that you've seen?
That's a very good question. You know, the struggle between following agile, transitioning to agile, is that when organizations are so used to follow waterfall, sometimes they can try to follow agile and mix the two of them. And that actually presents a lot of risk. You may try to say that you are actually being agile when you don't deliver an MVP, a minimum viable product. If you do not deliver a minimum viable product and you are iterating based on the customer's feedback, you are actually not following agile. You are blending your iterations, but you are actually not being agile, because the point of being agile is showing a customer something that could work and iterating based on the feedback and improving along the way until you deliver what ultimately satisfies the customer's needs. What I have found is that organizations that have been following waterfall for a while, they start following agile, but not to the T. Like, they follow agile, but they don't deliver an MVP. And this is a major, major flag, because you are not following agile. The Agile Manifesto is very clear when they say that a working software is the primary measure of progress. So it's the primary way that you can show that you are making progress towards your project in an agile context. If you don't deliver that MVP, you're basically following waterfall and trying to mix it with agile. I have faced that, and I believe this is a major major blocker for organizations to actually be agile.
Yes, it definitely, it can cause issues. And I found that I wouldn't say either one is the more correct version. It really depends on what your project is, what it demands, and how it's going to be operated. Because there are certain places where Agile doesn't quite work as well as traditional, but honestly, Waterfall doesn't work as well as Agile in other situations. You just have to figure out which version is going to be the correct way that you're doing it and which one makes sense. And if you are going to do, like you talked about, there is a lot of risk when you try to blend the two. So if you are going to do a hybrid approach or a blended approach, what restraints are you putting in there? What kind of safety, you know, left and right boundaries are you putting in to keep it moving in the right direction, but to ensure you're not going to run into any kind of scope creep or any unknown unknowns that, you know, you could have avoided?
Absolutely. And I'm with you. I will say that the way that I will approach on deciding what approach to follow, whether agile or waterfall, is by looking at the level of uncertainty in the project. If the project has a lot of uncertainty, I will definitely go with agile, because the requirements are not settled, and this means that things may change along the way. If there are no uncertainty, we actually have a clear picture of what we're going to deliver, and we can break down into phases that don't overlap each other. I will go with waterfall.
That's one of the things as a program manager, project manager, you find frustrating is when people just come in, we're going to be agile. We're going to be agile 100% of the time. And you're like, but we're delivering an off-the-shelf solution that requires no development. It's literally just do phase 1, 2, 3, and 4. Why are we going to be agile when there's no development? We're literally just implementing it. It doesn't make sense. And on the, you know, the reverse side, we got to develop all this different software. We're going to do phase 1, phase 2, it's people just get frustrated because they don't understand the differences, and that one is not necessarily better than the other. It's just different tools. That's what they are. They're tools, and you can use them for what you need.
It depends on the nature of the project. I will say if there is uncertainty, most of the things that we do have uncertainty, like for instance, a construction project, you know, that construction project actually needs to be built in a waterfall way, you know, because you cannot just take the house and build it by pieces that I mix with each other. The steps are not overlapping. You need to do a step one before you do a step two. So this is a clear example where you must go with a waterfall approach. But for things that you can actually come up with an MVP, like the Amazon website is a clear example of an agile project. The Amazon website started only allowing people to buy Jeff Bezos' book. That was the only thing that people could do when the Amazon website started. Look at the Amazon website right now. It has evolved primarily based on customer feedback and customer inputs.
Looking for a great book? Check out Once Left the Field of Valor. When Damien Shaw finds a blood-stained envelope after a battle, he is struck by a series of debilitating flashbacks that threaten to unhinge him. The letter leads him on a grueling journey of penance to present it to its intended recipient. This addicting page-turner is filled with action, suspense, romance, and perseverance. It will keep you on edge to the very end and leave you wanting more. Get your printed edition or ebook today on Amazon.
That's awesome. Those are great examples. Those make it really easy to understand for people who aren't getting what we were saying. But yeah, there's a time and a place for every version of project management. So learn when to apply them if you're a PM, because there's not a one-stop shop or, you know, one easy fix or silver bullet approach for every situation.
Absolutely.
So we're getting a little bit closer to wrapping up here. So I do have a few questions. I'll open it up to anything you'd like to talk or discuss. So first question, so being from the Dominican Republic, where somewhere that you would like to go inside the U.S. that you haven't been?
I would say I love to go to Hawaii. Some people would say that Hawaii is in the United States. Some people think it's another country, but it's still here. Yep. I never been to Hawaii. I love to be there.
I got to go there for a military exercise. So I didn't get to do all the fun touristy things, but it is a beautiful place. So I cannot recommend it more highly.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it is the United States. For some people who may be wondering, it is in the United States.
So you talked about living in Spain, which is somewhere I've always wanted to go. So what region of Spain were you in?
I was in Madrid. It's one of the most welcoming and beautiful cities that I've been seeing in my life. It's a very nice city. Historically, it's very rich. I was in a Barrio Las Letras, which is where... Miguel Cervantes and Don Quixote actually was coming from there, and it was very inspirational to be there, living in that area where this amazing book was written. So I love walking through Madrid and experiencing the culture and the life. So I had great time in Madrid, Spain. Great memories.
Yeah. Somewhere I would definitely got to put on my bucket list to get to, because I've always heard it's beautiful, very welcoming. The weather's fantastic most of the time. Definitely got to get there at some point.
It was a great experience to be there. I highly recommend it. The food is impressive.
I imagine. It's different than what you get here in the States, too. You know, we have a lot of Mexican food, Cuban food. I don't know if I've been to a Dominican restaurant. I probably need to try to seek that out specifically. But
I highly recommend you to give it a try. You should definitely go to Punta Cana and experience the beautiful weather over there and the beautiful sea. I never have seen more beautiful than in the Dominican Republic. It's like the color of the beaches there are so impressive. You may want to look into Punta Cana. You may want to experience that once.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely a beach person, so I gotta put that on my list of places to go as well.
I bet you're gonna have a lot of fun there.
So, where do you want to go in the next 5 years, career-wise?
Very good question. I hope to continue growing in my career where I am. I hope to be able to contribute to keep building high-performing teams and contributing to the world's mission of having a better workplace. You know, I believe there is so much to do in tech corporate world to build a positive and inclusive and a better workplace. I love to contribute to that mission. And I love to keep spreading my positivity on LinkedIn. So I hope to get to a leadership position where I can make influence and make a positive impact in the workplace that we have today.
I hope you definitely get there because you have a great energy, you have a positive attitude, and I think you can do a lot of good if you get to a major leadership position.
Thank you so much. I hope I get there.
So for my last question, this one's a little bit deeper, if you will, and you know, makes you think a little bit. And I try to come up with a point in everyone's life that's pivotal. And for a lot of us, it was going from junior high to high school, middle school to high school, whatever version that you want to. But I like to hone in on 14. So if you could talk to your 14-year-old self, what would you say?
What would I say to my 14-year-old self? Your dreams can come true. Focus on the positive experience. Take rejections, failures, and setbacks as opportunities to improve yourself. You're going to be fine. You are worth it. You are valuable. You have so much value to add to this world. Keep going, keep preparing yourself, and don't listen to no-sayers. Listen to leaders who can help you to get to the place where you hope to be, and keep spreading positivity. You can do this.
That's fantastic, absolutely fantastic, positive and encouraging, and probably most 14-year-olds need to hear that.
Thank you.
So anything else you'd like to share?
I just want to say that thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure being with you today. I hope everybody enjoyed the content, and stay tuned for all my positivity that I share on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people and spreading my positivity with them.
No, absolutely. Is there anywhere else that people can follow you or support you?
It'll be great if they reach out to me via LinkedIn.
Okay, awesome. So that's a great place to find her. She is an awesome follow if you haven't followed her already. Lots of positivity, good messages, and we'll give you, you know, brighten up your day when you see the posts.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Casey. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Constructive Curiosity. Visit constructivecuriosity.com to learn more about our mental performance training, career coaching, and business management consulting services. Constructive Curiosity has the insight to get it right. Thank you for listening, and keep being the best version of yourself.